of the Harmony Street Radio Show.
Hi, this is Terry Stewart, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio. And you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on one of my favorite shows, the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Mike Miller, my good friend, on the Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed, member from the Doo-Wop Shop.
Look at her eyes. Gee whiz, how they hypnotize. She's got everything a man could want. Man, oh man, what a prize. Gee whiz, I love that girl. Gee whiz, she sets my heart in a whirl. She's awful nice, such paradise. I'll find hers just because. Oh, heaven up above knows how much I love that lady so. She's got everything a man could want. Man, oh man, what a prize.
This is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to introduce to you two of my very good friends and two of the most talented guys that ever sang the music of our genre, and that is Spanky and Dino Pianegro. How you doing, guys?
Should I be chewing on something while I'm talking to you?
That wouldn't be you if you didn't.
Well, pretty much you can. I mean, usually I'm chewing on something when I'm on the phone.
Okay.
You know,
how you doing, Mike? What a pleasure to be on the show.
I'm actually doing great. And let's get back to the chewing thing. I'm notorious for eating while I'm having phone conversations, and my wife is always yelling at me. And it depends on what you're eating. It reminds me of the old conversation that I had with Johnny Maestro one time about 35 years ago. And I said, John, I noticed that you do what I do. And that is he keeps Hall's mentholyptus cough drops on the keyboard. And, you know, about once every two songs, he pops one in his mouth. And what he does is he would line them up and take the paper off of them so we wouldn't have to, like, struggle with the paper. And I said, what do you do when you get a song that moves along really fast, like Pretty Little Angel, and you can't swallow a lot during that song because it's a lot of singing and a lot of notes. And then you get the steady drool that comes down like the side of your chin. He said, yeah, I get that all the time. I said, me too.
Well, I don't think they make eucalyptus in Milky Way, do they?
I don't know. The Milky Way version. All right, let's get down to the beginning. Spanky, you were born in Brooklyn, correct?
Born in Brooklyn, born and raised, yeah.
Yep, and that's a place where many talented people came from. As a matter of fact, years ago I know that your brother Frank called me up and asked me if I wanted to join the Fireflies, and I said, no, I'm just starting this group called Harmony Street, and that was many long years ago. And he said, oh, you know, let me send you a tape of the group and everything. And I said, yeah. And I said, I'll send you the Harmony Street group. And then we had a phone conversation. And he said, I listened to the tape of Harmony Street. He said, stay with the Harmony Street group, he said.
My brother's a fanatical. He's very fanatical when it comes to Harmony.
No, I know.
He can't believe he tells me. You rehearse with guys, he goes, and you get the song down. Takes 3 hours. He goes, remember when you and I used to work together? We would just go up on stage and do the song Cold. I said, yeah.
Right. You chime off, two guys, you know, bing, bing. You know, I know. Well, I have his CD, The Other Frank.
Right.
You know, and actually I've played some cuts on it on my show. So, you know, I don't know whether he knows that, but I have. So, obviously my next question was, did you have... music in your family growing up?
And, oh, absolutely.
You know,
my mother had we had a piano in the living room. My mother played piano.
Oh, fabulous.
My father was a singer.
Right.
They didn't do it professionally, but
right.
They were both good enough if they wanted to.
Right.
They just chose not to. My mother was a housewife. She was a housewife that played piano, and everything had to be musical, you know.
Wow, that's fabulous, because most people have a piano in the house and they can't play it.
Yeah.
And then usually somebody starts taking lessons and they quit after five lessons. My brother wanted to play piano. I remember this. My father went out and bought him the greatest, like, Steinway piano, spent like $15,000, $18,000 on the piano. You know, we had in the living room. And he stopped taking lessons after three lessons. My father almost made him eat the piano. He was going to have the piano dismantled and serve it to him for dinner, like, for years. You know, but hey, you know, that's...
When I was eight, I took a couple of piano lessons.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't like it.
Okay.
So then my father came up with an idea. He figured, you know, every time we go to a cousin's house, we go to a cousin, this cousin, that cousin, and they always, every Sunday was somebody else's house, or Saturday night was somebody else's house.
Right.
And, of course, you can't have free entertainment if I play piano.
Right.
So they got me an accordion.
Oh, wow.
With all my cousins, my young cousins, we're outside playing and having fun and getting to know each other. I was the entertainment for the family.
Wow.
Yeah, so I missed out on all those outside running around things and having fun and maybe ripping a pair of pants or something, you know, on the knee. I didn't get a chance to do any of that because I was in the house doing all the accordion stuff of all the old songs so they could all sing with a musical background.
Wow.
Then, of course, you would get the signal. And the signal was whether you should sing Mama or not by Patty Francis. And it was usually somebody would say, hey, do Mama. And then all of a sudden, one of the uncles would come up and go, oh, you can't do Mama. Millie lost her mother last week. Yeah.
Wow.
Do Mama.
That's amazing. And everybody cried.
Yeah, that was a big tune.
Well, I had a question for you, and that is, you know, being from an Irish family, did you guys listen to the Clancy Brothers a lot growing up?
Absolutely. You have no idea the Irish music we listened to back then.
Running through our veins.
Yeah, that's right. It was going through our veins.
It had a big effect on you guys. I know that. You know, I could see that because in your repertoire now, it's very apparent. So, Spanky, tell me something. When did you realize that you could really sing a good song? I mean, at what age did you, you know, just all of a sudden...
Searching for that day to come that I'm going to say, wow, that was really a good song, can I swear. I started singing. I have little records that were recorded in a booth in
wow.
Coney Island. And I was singing when I was like two, when I was singing
wow.
Here Comes Peter Cottontail or something.
Wow.
Like that. But I was on TV singing when I was about four and a half.
Wow, that's you know, that reminds me of that old, you know, on an old Barry Manilow record where they took him and they, you know, for a quarter he made a record and his grandfather's behind him, sing it, Barry, sing it.
Well, they had to pick me up and hold me. I actually remember recording in that booth with
wow.
someone holding me up to sing in the microphone.
You were that little. Do you still have it?
Yeah, I have the record. I do.
No kidding. Oh man, yeah. It's too bad I didn't have it. Can you make an MP3 out of it?
I've never even tried to play them. not in the last 35 years, I haven't tried to play them.
Wow. You know, it's funny because, you know, we're talking about, obviously, you know, there's nobody in your family that's Irish, you know, that was, you know, a blood relative that I know of. I was a Jew who... you know, only hung around with the Italians because they sang. Most of my Jewish friends went and did other things, but I mostly hung with the Italians because Italians sang. And, you know, that's where I found my chops, you know, just singing with guys like Tommy Jacalone and, you know, those guys, you know. So
when you talk about transitions, though, like you sang with the Italian guys, I grew up in an Italian neighborhood.
Right.
And, you know, it was tough to be the only Irish family in the Italian neighborhood, but
right.
we still made it through.
No,
And any time one of my friend's older brothers, like I hadn't seen him in a while, you know, and I would say to my friend, where's your brother? And he would always go, my brother went to college. And we'd say, good, that's good. And then, of course, when we moved out of the Italian neighborhood and we moved into a predominantly Jewish neighborhood.
Right.
My friends, you know, you have to be hanging out with them a while. All of a sudden, their brother's not around. I would go, where's your brother? I haven't seen him in a while. And he would say, oh, my brother went to college. And then I realized years later, the only difference was the Jewish kid actually went to college. That was the transition I had to make because the Italian kid wasn't in college. He was in like a camp or something,
right.
More of a penitentiary.
No, I understand. That was the old expression, he went to camp. You know, well, you know, believe it or not, I did my time in Brooklyn because, you know, I sang with the Joe Pastor Orchestras for many, many years.
Oh, wow.
With Jimmy Serpico's version. And we used to do the showcases at the Glen Terrace. And I used to do screamers, which was that I would say Tony Michaels fell off the ladder because I would show up and the bride halfway through the first song would turn the groom around. She'd get a full view of the band. And she starts screaming and say, that's not the guy I hired. Because Tony Michaels would book three jobs. He'd go to one.
Absolutely.
And me and the other screamer would go to the other ones. And the problem was I had to collect the money either at the Glen Terrace or the Oriental Manor. And because, you know, they make the deposit and you get the rest of the deposit, you know, like during the wedding. And I had to sing good enough so that she wasn't so pissed, you know, by the time she was cutting the cake. So, and, you know, it was a lot of Pepto-Bismol, and we had pickup bands. In other words, I wouldn't have a set band, but they used to give me this guy, Michael Altman, who was the keyboard player in the pit for Pippin, and he was a great keyboard player. And, you know, I would have the book with the words and the charts and all of that, and I would call out a song, and he would look at me and say, what key? I mean, that's how good this guy was. And without him, I couldn't do it. But a lot of Pepto-Bismol, and they paid me like a fortune to do these screams.
Yeah, those were the days, the real good days. The weddings paid well, and you just had a good time. And then they would tell you to stop. They didn't want you performing when they were serving.
Oh no, your soup is served. You sat down.
Man, you did a
lot of wrestling during those
gigs. Oh, they were fabulous gigs. You know, you start off with, you know, a bossa nova or two, and then you get into and whatever and yada, yada. You know.
Now it's a big production.
Now here.
The music doesn't stop. It's loud.
Listen, we're going to a wedding. Tomorrow night is the rehearsal dinner wedding. That'll be, you know, 250 people. This is at the Marriott in Boca. The next night is the wedding, and then, of course, there's the brunch afterwards. So most weddings are 3 days. We had that when Paulette's daughter got married. You guys played the brunch, remember?
Right.
that was the Sunday of. But, you know, and that's the deal. And it's crazy. And what these bands get, like the guy who did the wedding, you know, no names. He hired a band, you know, it's a South Florida band. I says, if you don't mind me asking, what did you pay? He says, $15,000. And they gave me a break. And I looked at him. I wasn't going to say anything. I said, hey, you know, I'll be there. He says, you're going to sing? I says, I don't know. I said, usually after the third glass of wine, I just want to sit down and relax. So, because they always wait till, you know, you ate like the prime ribs, did the buffet, had nine drinks, and then they say, hey, you know, and then they call out your name. Mike Miller's going to come up and sing a couple of songs, you know. And
I like the weddings that they call you up and they call it, you know, to get some prices, and they say, we have a party coming up and we'd like to know how much you get. And they don't say, well, what kind of a party is it?
Right.
That's just a party, you know, 3-4 hours. Just how much do you get for that? So he goes, well, I need more information. I have to find out where it's located.
Right.
We have to drive up to Port St. Lucie. Right. The money, you know, the both things. One job, the woman started out, it was a 3-hour job.
Right.
Spell a party. Yeah. And by the time she got done, it turned out to be a 4-hour wedding with an hour cocktail party in another part of the hall.
Yeah, down in Miami Beach.
So we had a set up for that. Then they were going to get married by the pool, so we had to bring another microphone and speaker set up for that.
Right.
With music in three different locations.
Right.
And it turned out to be an hour of that, an hour of the cocktail, 4 hours of the wedding. It was a 6-hour party.
Right.
And then we went back and forth, and then finally, they go, yeah, we spent $22,000 on flowers. We spent $17,000 on the chair covers and the linens. And what do you get?
And I'm logging Bob.
Yeah, and we go, Dino says, we have to have three setups. He goes, what'd you have, $2,000?
No, I was like $5,000. They were at the Delano in Miami Beach.
Right.
$5,000, he tells him. And they go, why so much? There's only two of you. And we'll be working for 12 hours at, you know, setting up and breaking down and moving stuff and all day long. It's not going to end.
Like, yes, but let me just say something in the interim, and that is for those people that don't live in Southern Florida or don't know who Spanky and Dino are. Spanky and Dino are a mainstay in Southern Florida, and they make more music for two guys than you've ever heard in your entire life. Spanky plays the keyboard and has a golden voice. Dino is a fabulous drummer, and there are times when I think that Dino is a eunuch because his range is off the chart and his voice is velvet. And they're two people that everybody holds in reverence because they do any kind of material, from Sinatra to Italian tunes to ethnic tunes, to rock and roll, to standards, to top 40, to current.
Late at night, when it's dark and cold, I reach out for someone to hold. When I'm blue, when I'm lonely, she comes through. She's the only one who can, my baby granny is all I need. In my time, I've wandered everywhere around this world. She would always be there any day, any hour. All it takes is the power in my hands. This baby Graham's been good to me. I've had friends, but they slipped away. I've had fame, but it doesn't stay. I've made fortunes, spent them fast enough. As for women, they don't lust with just one man. But baby Graham will stand by me. They say that no one's gonna play this on the radio. They say that melancholy blues was dead and gone. But only songs like this, played in minor keys, keep those memories holding on. I've come far from the life I strayed in. I've got those scars from those dives I've played in. Now I'm home and I'm weary. In my bones, every dreary one that stands. But baby Graham came home with me. Ever since this gig began, my baby Graham's been good to me.
I'm in a New York state of mind. It was so easy living day by day, out of touch with the rhythm and the blues. Now I need a little give and take. The New York Times, the Daily News, it comes down to reality, and it's fine with me, 'cause I let it slide. Don't care if it's Chinatown or around the riverside. I don't have any reasons, left them all behind. I'm in a New York state of mind. Touch with the rhythm and the blues. But now I need a little a give and take. The New York Times, the Daily News. Oh, it comes down to reality. Fine with me, 'cause I let it slide. Don't care if it's Chinatown or around the riverside. I don't have any reasons, left them all behind. I'm in a New York state of mind. On that Hudson River line. Ooh, 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 ooh. 'Cause I'm in a New York. I'm in a New York. State of
there's a story untold.
But darling, I found I was wrong. What did you do right from the start? You made a fool of me, and then you broke my heart. Well, I hope and I pray that you'll hear my plea, and maybe someday she'll come back to me. Oh, here in my heart there's a story untold.
Actually, it's always been my thought that you guys should have much more recognition than you get just circling around Southern Florida. And that's the truth.
You know, I kind of felt that myself, and now it's getting worse.
Right.
But now, see, anytime Dino books a job, I'm from the old school.
Right.
For me, the money isn't really the important thing. It's the respect.
I understand.
And lately, the respect has been kind of diminishing because now when they could call you up to hire, they go, yeah, my friend told me you guys are really good. I should bring you into my restaurant. How many people do you estimate you could bring with you?
Right. They want to know, like...
We never heard those questions before. Years ago, when I worked in New York for Norby Walters, Norby would send us all over. 1 month we'd be in Jersey. 1 month we'd be in Long Island. One month we'd be in Manhattan. The next month we'd be in Connecticut. So nobody cared about your following because all of these places that Norby booked had really nice setups. They had nice people going there. And the owners of these places just trusted that Norby was going to send them really good entertainment to enhance their room.
Wow.
And entertain their customers. But today, when you pull up in front of a place, the guy walks outside to see if there's a bus like that you brought with you, like... You're based on, years ago you were based on entertaining their customers and keeping their customers happy.
Right.
And today it's based on how many people you can bring there to introduce these people to their food and their establishment.
Absolutely. And even if you bring the people, he'll come up to you afterwards and say, you know, you brought nice people, but they don't drink.
Right.
You know,
we tell them that's not our job.
Oh, well, of course not. You know, getting back to Norby, here's something that's going to blow your mind. Norby Walters lived when my parents moved from Long Island in Manhasset to Boca. They actually moved into Mediterranean Towers in Fort Lee, New Jersey for a couple of years while they were looking for, you know, which country club they were going to join in Florida. And I was there because Norby lived in that building along with Joe Pepitone, Frankie Valli, Buddy Hackett. Because that building was right over the bridge from Manhattan going into Fort Lee, New Jersey. And I was there when they took Norby away in handcuffs, the FBI, because he had gotten into the agency for athletes' careers.
Right. He was in the sports thing.
And he was strong-arming athletes that didn't want to resign, and the FBI actually took him away and put him away for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I was there actually pulling up in the parking lot when they put him into the car with the handcuffs. It wasn't Winston Towers. That's where they had the Palisadium. You might have played there, you know.
No, I played down from there.
Okay, I'm going to ask you.
The Palisadium.
Right.
Owned the place called the Binghamton.
I sang at the Binghamton. It was the ferry boat on the water.
That's right.
Down
right.
Below on River's Edge.
Right, directly across from Grant's tomb.
I sang at the Binghamton. Isn't that funny, Spanky? That was a great place.
I worked there many, many times. They would hire us there 2-3 months at a time.
Now, let me ask you something. Let's go back to, you know, you're singing and you realize you can sing and whatever. What was your first group?
My first group was called the Medallions.
Uh-huh.
And we had, there was me, I was playing accordion.
Right.
My brother was playing trombone.
Uh-huh.
My cousin played saxophone. We had a guitar player, and my other cousin played drums.
Wow. And
we played in all the wise guy joints in New York.
Wow. Did you play at Carmine's Copa?
No, not Carmine's Copa.
All right.
I played at places where the two cars would pull up out front. And two guys would get out, and one guy would stand by the front door, and the other guy would walk through the whole club and look at everyone's face, make sure he knew everyone, went through the place, went through the kitchen, made sure the back door was locked, came to the front, gave a signal to the car, the doors would open, and the guys would walk in.
Okay, now I got a question for you.
Friendly places I work.
There was a restaurant on 3rd Avenue that used to be down the block from Arthur's Discotheque and across from Friar Tuck's. It was called La Maganette. And when they moved, they started a supper club with dinner and a show. Did you ever work there?
You're talking about the one in Manhattan?
Yeah, La Maganette.
Yeah.
I did too.
My cousin got married there, yeah.
Right.
I sang there.
And those were some wise guys too. I knew Enrico, actually... the maitre d' eventually went to Il Cortile, and Il Cortile in Little Italy was Billy Joel's favorite place, and I used to see Billy in there like every time I went. Interesting.
There was a scene from Goodfellas,
right?
When they were in the bar and they beat up Billy Batts.
Right.
I'll never forget it. De Niro, I believe, said, "Look what this mutt did to my shoes."
Right.
Because he was kicking him in the face or something. And,
right.
And he got blood on his shoe or dented his shoe.
Right.
Well, I thought that was, like, it hit me like, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is like true to life. Because I was working at a club in Brooklyn, and a guy walked up to a wise guy's girlfriend and said, "Hey, you want to dance?" And she very politely said, "No." And he made the mistake of grabbing her hand and pulling her off the stool to the dance floor.
Right.
And he was immediately escorted out the door.
Right.
And I happened to be standing out there, and one guy, they didn't gang up on him or nothing, one guy just beat him. And as the guy's on the ground, the guy walks away from him now, leaves him there. And as he's walking past me, he holds up his hand, which is bleeding from hitting the guy, and he says to me, "Look what this mutt did to my hand."
Oh, that's pretty funny.
So when I heard it in the movie, I went, "I heard that line before." You know?
Well, that reminds me of two things. The first thing is, you know, when I had my group Devotion, and that was pretty much of a disco group at that time, it was during the 70s, we used to do a lot of shows at Great Gorge. And, you know, there was a rule there, and everybody knew it because they had it posted, do not touch the bunny tail. You could do anything you wanted to the bunny, but don't touch the bunny tail, because they were on with little eye hooks, the bunny tail, and they weren't sewn on. They were on with eye hooks, so, you know, I guess you could take them off, and they were interchangeable.
So one guy... Now you're going to keep
bringing up stories here.
So,
I got a job at the New York Playboy Club. I was just telling Dino the story going to work last week. I got a job at the New York Playboy Club, and they said, we want to bring you to the New York Playboy Club on a Monday night,
right?
Because we want to audition you to work at Great Gorge. So we said, okay. So we go there Monday night. I don't know if you know how much fun it was to unload your car and bring the stuff up the elevator around. And you actually played, when you walked into the Playboy Club, there was like a giant champagne glass.
Right.
And you actually played in that champagne glass.
Right.
And that was also the dance floor. And if a lot of people were there, the glass started swaying side to side. Anyway, we played there one night. And the next day, we waited for a call from Norby to see if the guy from Great Gorge liked us or not.
Right.
And his report was he was very sorry that he couldn't make it. And he wished that we could do it again the following Monday so he could come out and hear us. So, again, we did that. And not only did you have to find a place to park, but you'd park in a garage, and then at midnight, you had to go get your car and take it out of the garage because the garage is closed.
Right.
And then you had to find a place in the street to park for the last set or two, you know. Anyway, so the second week we get there, I bring the stuff in, and I go upstairs to the cafeteria, which was just for people who work there. And I see my guitar player, Tony, sitting there. And the manager is talking to Tony and telling Tony everything we did wrong the week before. He told him that we were not supposed to stay in the lounge, even though people, our friends, came to see us play there.
Right.
We weren't allowed to talk to them on our breaks. We had to go right up to the cafeteria.
Wow.
And we weren't allowed to talk to the bunnies. That was a no-no. And so I'm sitting there. So as soon as I walk in, Tony says to the manager, "He's the leader. Tell him." So the guy tells me this, all the rules that we broke. And I was like, is this guy kidding me? And then he goes, "So now you know what you got to do." And Tony, who usually never said anything, but he was such a horny bastard, I think it really bothered him that he couldn't talk to the bunnies. So he turned to the guy and goes, "All right, let me tell you something."
Uh-huh.
He goes, "People come to see us. I can't be rude and not talk to them because
right.
these people are important people.
Right.
Secondly, what's the big deal if I talk to the bunny or not? They say hello to me, I say hello to them. What's
right.
the big deal?"
Right.
And he goes, "Thirdly, we still didn't get paid for last week." So, he goes, "Until we get paid for last week and this week,
right.
we're not even going to go on."
All right.
The manager walks out of the room, comes back 15 minutes later with two checks. He pays us for last week and this week.
Very good.
And we never worked Great Gorge.
Yeah.
The Huntington Townhouse.
Had my problem
there. I pull up in front of the Huntington Townhouse, and it says free parking. So I get out of the car, and I wasn't playing on the job, I was just fronting. I was singing and fronting. I had a microphone in my hand. I get out of the car. The guy goes, $5. I said, "The sign says free parking." He goes, "That's for the guests." He goes, "I can tell from the microphone, you're working here."
Okay.
He goes, "So it's $5. So I take out the $5, I pay him. As I'm walking to the door, there's 15 doors to get into the building. As I step to open the door, there's a guy at the door, one of the door guys, he goes, "Oh, all the way down to the right. On the end."
Right.
And I go, "What?" He goes, "Are you working here tonight in the band?" "Yeah." I go all the way down to the right on the end, and it says, "Musicians only."
Ugh.
And at that particular moment, I realized what the poor black people had to put up with all the time with the special doors and special. I mean, it was like, are you kidding me?
You know.
I'm singing at a wedding, and I can't walk in the same door as anybody else.
Well, you're always a second-class person. Mary Wilson told me this, and this is an interesting story. They were on
Very
the bus.
Beautiful woman, by the way.
Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun. My baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Yes, they were on the bus. They're not allowed to go into this particular diner restaurant. So they have to wait on the bus, and the food is going to be brought out to them to the bus. They had just finished the big show. And Diana gets fed up, and she says, "I'm Diana Ross." They've already had like 3 or 4 hits. She said, "I'm getting off the bus. I'm going inside." She goes inside. She announces who she is. "I'm Diana Ross." Sits down at the table. She says, "I want to be served." They escorted her out. So what happens is that Len Barry is sitting in the bus, and Len Barry was a maniac in those days. His, you know, Len's real name is Boris, need I say more? And Len goes and grabs the owner of the diner almost by the neck and tells him everybody from the bus is coming in to eat. Sonny Turner was on the bus and a whole bunch of other people, and they all ate because, you know, Len Barry made him afraid, you know.
Right. He walked in there and he said, we're all coming here to eat. 1, 2, 3.
Exactly. That's how elementary it's going to be.
That's right. That's how elementary it's going to be.
Now, Dino, you missed a lot of that early stuff, you know, but I'm sure you heard the stories that trickled down.
I was around for like a lot of the late 70s stories, and
right.
All the stories from back then, and just I wish I was around back then, because the way the business was, it seemed like there was so much more, and there was so much more fun to be had.
Right. Well, you know, in those days it was a lot more open and free, and there was a lot of work, and you know, I mean, you still had your. The band comes in and they're a second-class citizen, but once you start playing and everybody enjoys you, you know, it's a little bit different. Now, let me ask you something. So you're a young guy, and your father is going out and he's singing and he's loading the car and he's taking his microphone and everything. When did you all of a sudden get bitten by the bug?
Well, I've always liked music.
Right.
I've always liked music growing up. I always liked all different kinds of music. And then being around it with my father back then, like in the 70s, he had like a top 40 group. You know, my father back then in the 70s, you know, when I was around, I was born in 71.
Right.
He always had, most of the time, he always had a top 40 group. So they were doing all current stuff.
Right.
And then I remember living in East New York, and then they had the horn band. And I remember being in the basement when they were rehearsing like Blood, Sweat, and Tears and all the Chicago stuff and... you know, so I was always around music, but I always knew I wanted to get into it somehow.
Right.
And when the opportunity came about, my father's band was actually breaking up, and my father was putting a new band together, and he asked me. I wasn't really happy where I was at, as far as jobs were concerned, as far as schooling.
Now, where were you living then?
I was living down here in Florida.
Oh, okay, so you were already down in Florida, and you were always singing, I'm assuming, because...
No, not really. I would only sing when I go see my father at certain jobs or if he did outdoor events, I would show up and do a song or two. But I never sang. I never sang harmonies, and I never sang all night long. And my,
wow.
You know, I never did 4 hours.
Right. Well, now you're doing 4 hours, like many nights a week for many weeks
right.
straight. And, you know, what happens is your chops get so good...
Every minute, every hour, every day.
need someone to enforce, to keep me warm when Mondays are cold. Sunday kind of
it is, you know, we used to do 5 weeks straight, 5 nights a week, 5 hours, you know.
Right.
And then what would happen is that by Friday you couldn't talk in the morning, but you sang like
right.
a bird at night, and then you wake up right. the next morning, you couldn't talk, but then you went out and you sang again.
Right.
So, you know, that's the life of a singer. When did you start playing the drums?
Actually, at 19, I started doing everything basically all at the same time on a full-time level.
Wow.
You know, and it would just started out where my cousin's a drummer up in New York. His name is Frank Bellucci. He goes by the name of Cheech.
Uh-huh.
He works with a bunch of different groups, and, you know, he's a phenomenal, phenomenal drummer. He came down. He actually wrote a book called Feet First, and he's taught by DW. And, you know, he came down, and he basically taught me. And I was actually learning how to play drums. I was actually learning songs that my father's group was doing, because they had made tapes for a while, so I started learning all the material that he was doing.
Right.
Plus, I was learning harmonies. Plus, I was woodshedding every day by practicing 4 or 5 hours a day on just rudiments.
Right.
And then 5 weeks later, I started working in a nightclub.
Wow.
Just bang, all at once.
Yeah, see, because what happened was I was going to open up a place in Palm Beach.
Right.
And I went to the Palm Beach thing, and I brought in the other two guys I was working with at the time. I don't want to mention names.
Right.
And I said, listen, I have an opportunity of being a partner up here. But come up with me and let me know if you don't mind the drive, if you don't mind the place, because if you do, we'll work here.
Right.
But if you do mind the place and you do mind the drive, I'm not going to invest money. But if I do invest money, I'm going to work here and watch my money. So they came up and the both of them said, oh, no, man, this is a great place. Oh, no, man, this is great. We got to do this. This is great. I said, you sure? Yeah. So I invested my money. And then after a couple of weeks, they turned to me and they went, oh, this is crazy, man. We don't want to work this. We don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And I said, so I can't leave. So what do you want to do? They said, well, we're going to go back to the other place we were working at. Why don't you come with us? I said, no, I can't leave. So now I was so aggravated.
Right.
And I turned around. I said, I know I could get guys to put a band together, but what's the point of getting guys? These guys are like flaky. So I turned to Dino. He was sitting there watching TV. He was a waiter in a restaurant. And I said to him, do you want to be in my band?
Ah.
And he looked at me and he said, doing what? I said, I need a drummer.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I don't know. You think I can do it? And I said, if you want to do it, you can do it. If
right.
you don't want to do it, don't waste your time and don't waste my time.
Right.
And he thought about it for about 30 seconds and he goes, okay, I'll do it. So we called my cousin up. And I said, don't laugh, but Dino has to be a drummer in 5 weeks.
Ah.
Of course, my cousin left. And the rest, as he said, that's how it happened. He was in the garage every day.
Wow.
And he practiced every day, and he listened to our cassettes, and he learned all the songs. He learned
wow.
all the arrangements. And 5 weeks later, he started with me. I mean, that's unheard of, but he did.
Well, you know, paradiddles and flams all day long, and, you know, that's 5 weeks is very soon, but it shows you that, you know, when you're motivated, you can do almost anything.
Plus the money was good.
Yeah, but you know, now the rest is history because, I mean, you know, now you don't even have to think about what you're doing.
No,
so,
I actually love what I can't see myself really doing anything else. I actually do love what I do.
Right.
You know, I hate the business side of it because in the last couple of years it really turned, we turned it into a real serious business.
Right.
But in the same respect, you know, you try not to lose the whole thing of it, which is to have fun, and because once it truly becomes a job, I'm out.
All right, but let's talk about this. Let's take it from when you're in the garage or you're downstairs and you're doing the paradiddles and the flams and you're going through the rim shots and you know you're trying to learn the tunes. Step by step as to how you got to where you are now. You know, you're in the band and you're learning the tunes and you guys are getting better and better because you're increasing your repertoire and you're working on your harmonies and everything else. And you're getting jobs. When did the first nightclub come about for Spanky and Dino and your family?
Our first nightclub?
Yes.
Well, I was working in the place that I invested the money in.
Okay.
And these guys, the other parts of the band were leaving.
Right.
So they left, and Dino just walked in with the new guitar.
I had nothing to really do with that as far as, I was just really a worker there, you know, in the band.
Right.
Right.
And then what, a couple of years later, we were working in another place. We were a house band. At the time, back then, see, it was great because we were a house band. We were working 5 nights a week in the same place.
Right.
That was the beauty of the business. You know, you actually worked in a place and you made a salary and you worked there 5 nights a week, which is really truly unheard of right now.
Right. Well, you know, that's always the best situation because you don't have to run around. The people change.
Right.
You know,
the fact that you don't have to move equipment and then
by the
third or fourth night, you know, and you know the sound is actually better because you actually learn the room, you learn what you can do, how
right.
much you can push it, and you tweak it out, and you have such a phenomenal sound after a while that it's just, you, now you just start moving stuff around, and it's just every night's a different room, different settings, different, you know,
right,
environment.
Oh, yeah. You know, and really and truly you have to take that into account, you know, that when you come in and set up in a place, every night is different. The songs are the same, but every night is really different. You know, it's takes on like a different chemistry. So what was the first club that you guys owned?
The first one that we all owned together.
Fibber McGee's.
Fibber McGee's. And then we went from Fibber McGee's, then we started working again, and then we went to...
I knew there was an Irish club in there somewhere.
Yes, yeah, it was after my uncle, who lied a lot.
There you go.
Everybody called him Fibber, so it was Fibber McGee's.
Okay.
And from there we went down and we started working back at Memories Lounge.
Right.
And then...
Golf Club of Plantation.
No, then we went to work for Vinny.
Right.
At Vinny's, and then Vinny burned down, and then we opened up at the Golf Club of Plantation in 1994.
Which was phenomenal.
And we called it Spanky's Gang's Clubhouse. And that's where we had Rudy West singing there. We had
right.
Maestro singing there. And it became a place that anytime any of the oldie guys were in town, for some reason, they knew of the place and they stopped in.
Well, see, this...
We had the Cadillacs, we had the Vito and the Salutations.
Maybe Beaumont.
Maybe Beaumont.
But tell them the best story ever with Larry. Larry Chance.
Larry Chance, right? One night, on a Sunday night at the Spanky's Gang's Clubhouse, 9 o'clock was like the deadline. If you had 100 people at 9 o'clock, no one knew was coming in after 9 o'clock.
Right.
If you only had 20 people, that was it. After 9 o'clock, nobody came there on a Sunday night.
Right.
So one Sunday night, we had about 35 people there, and we're playing, and the phone rings, and I get there, they go, it's for you, and I get the phone, I say, hello. And it's Mindy Lang from Magic Radio.
Right.
She said, and she's talking very low, and she goes, listen, we're on the air right now, and Larry Chance and the Earls are doing a show with Ken Held, and Larry wants to know if you're open tonight because he wants to come to visit. So I said, yeah, we're open tonight. So she goes, okay, then we'll come in. He's going to come in and visit you tonight. I said, oh, cool. So we go up on stage and we're playing, and it's about 9:15, and we don't expect anybody else. And I didn't make an announcement like Larry Chance is coming in or anything. I didn't do that. I think if he came in, you know. Just,
yeah, because you never know.
Right. So I told my cook, when I knew they were definitely coming, I told the cook, I said, dude, make me up a nice buffet, I said, for about 10 people. And because we had another private dining area in the back. I said,
right.
Make me a buffet. I said, because if they're coming, they're probably going to be hungry when they get here. I want to give them something to eat. So as we're playing, the door opens up and 5 people walk in. And 5 minutes later, the door opens up and 10 people walk in.
Huh.
And I'm going, where are these people coming from? And then, before you knew it, after 9 o'clock, we had no one came in after 9 o'clock in any circumstances. The place was almost completely filled.
Wow.
Like a Friday or a Saturday. And I said, I got to ask everybody, did you come from a show or something and you decided to come here for a drink or something? And they go, no, we were sitting home relaxing, listening to Magic Radio, and Larry Chance told Ken Held, listen, I'd like to stay longer, but my friend Spanky's waiting for me, so we're going over to Spanky's Gang's Clubhouse.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the place was robbed. So now he walks in. I immediately tell the girls, just bring him right into the back. So they bring him into the back, and he's got a thing. So we go on break, and I said, we go say hello. And he goes, what's this? I said, are you guys hungry? He goes, yeah. I said, I knew it. I said, here, this is for you. And they sat down and they ate the buffet and they had a great time.
Wow.
And then they came out to the front and everybody was talking to them and stuff. And all of a sudden, Larry goes to me and says, Spank, do you mind if we go up there and do a few songs? I said, do I mind?
You're right.
I said, do whatever you want.
Right.
And now he tells Dino to drive his guitar player to the hotel so he can get his guitar.
Wow, this is becoming like a show.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
He went up on stage and did the whole thing. The place went crazy.
I'm sure that's because that's Larry. I mean, you know, Larry's the best, you know.
Yeah, and that was it.
And
it turned into a place like that, you know. We had Tiny Tim there. It was just,
right.
It was just a crazy, crazy place.
What you guys are famous for are having the most talented bands in Southern Florida gravitate around you, and also being a magnet for all the big names to come and enjoy your hospitality, because the Larry Chance, when Larry came down to the club, what year was that?
We had the place from 94 to 96, and I'm guessing it had to be the end of 94 or early 95, because I remember we still had the small bar in the front.
Right, because when I used to come down, my parents were the first house in Encantada in Boca Point. They moved down there in around 79. And when I used to come down and visit them, and I used to go out, you know, I'm trying to remember where I went and whatever. I used to hear Reunion later on. You know, that was one of the Joey Kennedy's band I used to listen to. Right. I used to go out and listen to. And I probably was coming down to the club. I know Kenny Held was playing some of my stuff at that time, so I was friendly with Kenny. That's when Kenny was in the old station there.
KAT.
Yeah, you know, when he used to, like, pull up in the back and, like, pull the milk crates out of the back of the truck, and the redhead used to follow him in there, you know, in the old days. Take me up to the point where, now, during all this time, there were plenty of really good groups around Southern Florida.
Absolutely.
And, of course, you guys would play. Let's name some of those groups. I know you had Reunion.
I had Legacy.
Legacy, who's still together.
The Five Boroughs.
The Five Boroughs, of course.
What was Gino and...
The East Side Kids.
East Side Kids.
Right.
The Bowery Boys.
Well, you know, it's funny. Years ago, also, because I knew Frank Iovino, you know, when I was living up in Connecticut and I had Harmony Street, and he always used to say, come down to Florida. So there were times when I used to go over to his house, and I had a friend also that used to come down, had a house down there. His name was Tony Georgie. He sang with the Magic Touch. He was one of the funniest guys I ever met. He actually passed away just recently, as have so many of our friends. But we used to go over to Iovino's house, and he would have the Five Boroughs rehearsals. There would be 27 guys. There would be 9 first tenors, 6 second tenors, and they would all be singing the same song, and you know, with 4 leads, and so, and they'd all be singing, and then they'd sing 2 tunes. And then they'd run out the front porch and smoke 3 cigarettes. Then they'd run back in and sing 2 more tunes. You know.
That's about right.
And that was rehearsal. Right, that was rehearsal for the Five Boroughs. And then when I moved out to Florida years later, which was in about the year 2000, because I had lost, believe it or not, my mother, my brother, and my father. My brother died of AIDS, and my parents were both ill. And it was too much, and I finally quit Harmony Street, quit my job, went through a divorce, and moved to Florida. And Frank said to me, why don't you become a borough? And I said, first of all, I don't want to be the 28th borough. I said, and second of all, I'm not in the mood to sing. I really can't. You know, I just need to rest and relax and get R&R and, you know. And then I get a phone call from George Galfo, and he said, I want you to join the Mystics. And, of course, that's another whole story, which I won't get into. But, you know, I decided.
Do you remember how we met?
Do I remember how we met? I will. Well, first of all, you know, we're going to get into Dino Pete's, you know, which was probably my favorite place in the whole world.
Me too.
But I will say that. I think there was a show at the Italian American Hall.
That's it.
And the Mystics were doing, like, we had like 4 rehearsals, and they said, show up at the Italian American Hall and sing a song. And I remember it was like the Keystone Cops. Like, we got up on stage and asked each other, now who's singing lead on this song again? You know, it was one of those moments. But yes. And I actually, that night, ran into Neil Hollander that I hadn't seen for like 30...
Wait, I think the song you actually sang, the first song that I actually heard you sing...
Right.
I Swear.
Oh, no kidding. Well...
I think that's what it was.
I saw Neil Hollander for the first time in many, many years because I met him at the Camelot Inn in Mineola when I was like 17.
Did you sleep that night after you saw
him? Yeah, no, actually, because, you know, I remember because there was food there, and I knew it was Neil because I saw a guy, you know, that would look like Neil, and he was drooling. and then I realized it was Neil. I saw Johnny Contino, who I hadn't seen like for a million years, you know, Long Island guy, and a whole bunch of other guys that were there that night. It was like old home week. But yes, that was the first night that we met.
But do you remember? How you soft-soaped me?
No, tell me. I forgot.
Because you guys had no background, and you came up to me,
right?
And you said to me, "Hi, you're Spanky." I said, "Yeah." And you go, "I'm Mike Miller. I'm a good friend of your brother's."
Right. Okay.
And I went, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah. Your brother called me up, wanted me to join his group." I said, "Wow." He go, "Listen. We like to sing." I said, "Well, I really can't. We threw this thing together. We didn't throw it together to make any money.
Right.
We threw it together just to get together at Christmas time because we never saw anybody.
Right.
And we told everybody we're
just going to split there too, right?
Yeah, the Fabulons were there. We said we're just going to split the door,
right?
You know, amongst us.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up with $21 each for the night.
Right.
And all of us were anyway. And I said, the only way I can put you guys on is to put you on last. Only because, you know, all these guys, they want to go home already, and they want to get their thing done. I said, if I tell them I'm putting another band there, they're going to kill me.
Well, let me ask you a question before you go on. Do I owe you money?
No, we
don't. Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure, because that's not a problem either. Go ahead.
Yeah, so you came up and you did it.
Right.
And you, after you sang it, you turned around and you said to me, I mean, after I was nice enough to back you up for this thing here,
right?
You turned around and said to me, "Do you think you could have played it any faster?"
I said that.
I was like, "Boy, this guy's a pain in the ass."
Right. That's very funny. I guess you guys just wanted to go home at that point.
Very long day. I mean, I'm not being criticized. Yeah, like, isn't that kidding me?
That's funny. I never knew that. You know, why didn't you tell me that over the years? I never knew that. Sometimes things come out of your mouth that you know, it's like in the moment, you know what I mean?
Well, no, because after you did that and you turned and you faced forward, I picked up the mic stand. Like I was going to throw it at you.
Really? Oh, so there was a visual attached to that as well.
Yeah, there was definitely a visual. I thought you grabbed it.
That's really funny. Well, now, after all these years, can I formally apologize on the radio?
No, I never accept apologies.
Okay.
Because if it's funny, it's funny. That's it. After we had
Spanky's Gang's Clubhouse.
After we had Spanky's Gang, Fibber McGee's, then we had Spanky's Gang's Clubhouse. And in both places, I had partners, and that doesn't work.
Right.
Then we went back to work for Vinny.
Right.
Vinny wanted us now, since we weren't going to be. He reopened, and he was doing well, but he knew that if we came over from the golf club, from Spanky's Gang's Clubhouse to his place, you wouldn't be able to get in.
Right.
Because we'd bring everybody from there. We had tremendous following at that point. So he made us an offer we couldn't refuse, and we went over to work with him.
Right.
And we were there a couple of years, and then he sold it, and somebody approached us to open up a place which is now Roundup.
Uh-huh.
On Pine Island and 84. And we went there, we opened it up, with partners, and that was the worst place as far as partners were concerned. I mean, on a Friday night, I was actually choking one of my partners.
True story.
I had the true story. I couldn't take it anymore. I grabbed him by the throat. I was choking him because.
And we walked out. We got done with it.
Wow.
And I said, "We're done. That's it." And we just walked out. So, then we decided to open up, Pete.
We were actually driving by it was called Encore Cafe years ago. We were driving by it.
Right.
And we were so sick of where we were, we walked out and we said, "What are we going to do? We can't go work for somebody anymore." We took some time off. We were just so sick of it.
Right.
I said, "We can't work for anybody anymore." And then one it was, we drove by Dino Peach, which used to be the old Encore Cafe.
Right.
way back when my father first came down to Florida, he started working at the Encore Cafe, and we were talking. I said, wouldn't it be funny if you started out here and we all came back here and did what we need to do in here? And we went in there and we struck a deal, and then we opened up Dino Pete's.
Wow.
And then we found out it used to be called the Rock Casino, and Johnny Depp used to play there.
Johnny Depp used to play there with his band years ago.
Oh, wow. Well, let me just say a few words about Dino Pete's. Dino Pete's was the most fabulous place because not only was the food great, and of course, Dino Pete's is named after Dino and your son Peter, which, you know, are your two sons. And, you know, that's, most people would always ask, you know, how'd you get a name like Dino Pete's? And of course, that's the answer. But the magic about Dino Pete's is that Spanky and Dino would play there and they would open up. And, you know, everybody would have a fabulous time. And then there would be a show from the top groups in South Florida. Whoever was at the top of the heap, and I'm talking about groups that were at the top of the heap, and they were packed, and there were people that had their permanent seats there, that regulars that sat in the same seat. The menu was fabulous. The bartenders were fabulous. But on any given night, where could you go to see the legendary songwriter Luther Dixon drinking a beer? Guy who had written 16 Candles and so many hits for the Crests and the Shirelles and all these, and just sit there very humbly. People would come over and say, "You're Luther Dixon," and he'd go, "Yeah, I'm just glad to be here." Where else could you go to see the best of, where else could you go than other to see Dion's sister on a date, having her spaghetti, sitting up in the back? I remember one night I sang I Believe to her at the table and whatever, and she said to me, "You know," she says, "I wasn't the prima donna. It was my sister. So the next time you see my brother, you tell him I was not the prima donna." And this was Donna.
I got a good story to you about Luther Dixon.
Sure.
As we all know, Luther Dixon was black.
Right.
And he used to come in there all the time. And one time a newspaper, they wanted to do a newspaper article on us. So they took a picture of me and Luther sitting next to each other.
Right.
And it said Spanky Pianegro. Now they wanted to do, this is when what do they call that when you check on it? Proofreading. This is when proofreading is very important.
Very important.
They wanted to put, what they wanted to write was Spanky Pianegro and songwriter Luther Dixon.
Right.
Sitting at, you know, at Dino Pete's, blah, blah, blah. And they left the G out on song. So when it printed up in the newspaper, it said, Spanky Pianegro and son, writer Luther Dixon. And then people would come to me and they would go, I don't get it.
What's up?
Yeah, he's the black sheep of the family. We don't say that.
And Luther saw this as well.
Yeah.
And did he like it?
Yeah.
I used to work behind a bar a few days a week during the day.
Right.
And he would come in and I would actually be able to sit there and talk to him. And some of the stories he would talk about were like I said before, it had to be some amazing times back then because nothing ever bad comes out of their mouth about some of those stories. They're just amazing stories.
Wow. Well, you know, I mean, to say that Dino Pete's was one of the most fun places, you know, it was a pleasure to work there. I know you would come in, you guys would finish the set. I always would remember chasing you around Dino to make sure that you plugged our sound system in after setting it up into the mains, because
right.
What would happen is that you had your own sound system, but I always wanted it, you know, the voices to carry up on top around the back of the bar,
right.
You know. And I remember always the last thing I would ask you was, it was only one wire to plug in, but I remember chasing you all over the place. Did you remember to plug us in? Did you remember to plug us in?
You're right.
You know, that was always my thing, because nobody else in the group gave a shit about that, nor knew how to do it, nor cared.
You ran the sound for that group at the time when you were
around. I not only ran the sound.
But you did the tracks, too.
And not only made the tracks, I not only arranged all the harmonies, I not only recorded all the CDs, but I bought them the sound system.
Nice.
Now you got it?
You want to join a group? You want to join another group? I'm looking for a singer.
I mean, yeah.
I'm holding a Dino Pete's menu right in front of me.
Oh, wow.
And I got this thing. It says Dino Pete's Steak Special, a distinctively unique steak special since 1999, served with vegetable. The Fredo, which is 10 ounces. The Sonny, which is 14 ounces. The Michael, which is 16 ounces. And the Godfather, which is 20 ounces.
Wow.
We had everything like with names on it and stuff. We had the Rat Pack pasta specials named after Sinatra and Dean Martin and stuff like that.
One of the big things, you know, about going there was seeing really how heartwarming it was to see a father and a son working together so closely. And the question that I always had for Dino was, at this point, are you now parenting your father?
I don't know. I'm still learning.
Oh, okay. That's an honest answer.
As far as work is concerned, like Saturday night we're doing a private job and we're bringing a guitar player with us.
Right.
Mostly. And what happens is Tony will call me up and say, what time are we going Saturday? What's the address? And I send him the same email all the time, and it says, at my age, Dino tells me what time to be ready and what shirt to wear.
Right. I got you. Because, hey,
that's
listen.
That's all I know.
What to wear is very important. What
yeah,
about...
I says, I already know thousands of songs in my head. I play them. I sing them. I play bass for them. I play right hand. I play orchestration
right.
for them. I cannot take care of the rest of the stuff. So Dino takes care of it. Just tells me what time to be ready and what shirt to wear.
Well, I know that Dino's pretty much become the engineer, you know. I mean, that's what I see. And I know, you know, you guys probably know a couple of thousand songs together because you've been doing this so long. And it's just a question of eye contact at this point as to what's going on. The other thing is that anybody who is in the business in Southern Florida, you guys are so unselfish because whenever you have a gig, if somebody comes down and they're in the audience and, you know, they are worth their weight to come up and grab a microphone, you guys immediately invite them up to come and sing. That's either because you don't have to sing as many songs or because you're just plain,
No, it's fun. It breaks up,
it's nice to see people too.
Like for instance, Saturday night, George Galpo was there.
Right.
And,
Lenny Citron
from
right.
the Salutations, and Galpo from the Mystics. So
right.
they both came up at the same time, and Lenny was doing bass, and George was doing leads, and Dino and I were...
Well, the two nights before, we worked at another restaurant in Coral Springs, and Vito Balsamo came in.
Right? Right, I spoke to Vito about that. You know, as a matter of fact, Vito was supposed to call me last Tuesday, you know. Vito can't do anything unless Gary Ferrari tells him to do it, so.
Oh, Gary.
He says, he looks at Gary and says, what do I do now? Well, you know, here's something that you didn't know, and that is when Vito had the fight with Dave Rick, Dave held auditions, and I was one of the guys that went to the audition in Brooklyn on Church Street, at Dave Rick's house to try out for the Salutations, and I got the nod, and I only went to 4 or 5 rehearsals after that, and I decided it was too far to drive. So, you know, that was that, and, you know, Vito and I always remember that story, you know. And as a matter of fact, Bob DiPaolo, when they split, Bob DiPaolo, the bass, went with Dave Rick, and that's when Lenny Cintron went with Vito. Believe it or not, that's when Lenny came into the group with Vito.
Wow.
You know, it's a very small world. And guys that do this, I mean, you know, you can draw, you know, a straight line between two dots all over this thing. Once you get talking to people, especially in Southern Florida, you know, and really and truly, there's only one degree of separation and not 6 degrees, as they say. Let's get down to some of your material and some of your recordings, because you guys have done an awful lot of recording.
Yeah.
And a lot of your recording has the Brooklyn roots in it, you know, always back to Brooklyn, you know, with the creative roots at Christmas time in Brooklyn.
all around, making a list of things to buy from Alabama to sure, it's that and so. Well, it's Christmas time in Brooklyn. Even Poppy's gonna be Santa Claus. I see a sled, it's double pop, bringing gifts to one and all. Going down to the candy store to hang out with Frankie and Paul. The wind blows up and my father yells out, yo, don't forget the gunnels. It's Christmas time in Brooklyn and we're all gonna have a ball. Up Santa brings you what you want. Every Christmas one. It's a little cold up here. Why don't we go down the subway, get some good echo and some warmth, and sing some songs like this.
Stay bells ring, are you listening? Can't hear the land, snow will just stare.
Yo, Dino, do the one about the snowman.
How frosty the snowman was a child at the stone.
That's right, what about that one, that Jingle Bell Rock?
Hey, do that song about the quiet night. You know, nothing like at my house at night. The real quiet night.
Silent night. Holy night.
Something like that,
right?
I bought my favorite, that Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. That's one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, we're rocking around the Christmas tree at the Christmas party. Hey, what's that song about the reindeer with the big nose? You know, like Carmine from the fruit stand. What's the song?
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer and a very shiny nose.
Hey, my mother's calling me. We've got time for one more song.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
Merry Christmas from Spanky and Dino.
Wah, 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 wah.
Of course, Rocco the Wise Guy, which is a fabulous tune.
Between the youths of today and when I was growing up is one word: respect. If I disrespected my mother, she beat the shit out of me. If I disrespected my teacher, the teacher told the principal called my mother came to school and beat the shit out of me. If I disrespected my neighbors, the neighbors would tell my mother, my mother come out to the street with a wooden spoon. She beat the shit out of me.
Petey! Petey!
Shut the fuck up! I'm telling a story over here. And that's how I learned respect. Your problem is, your mother never beat the shit out of you. And if you thought you were too big for your mother, she'd walk you right down to the club in my neighborhood, and there was this guy, respected by everybody, Rocco. What? You don't know Rocco? Who the fuck doesn't know Rocco? Well, let me tell you something. This is his story. Now get out of my face while I'm fucking eating.
You know Tony and Guido and Joey and Vinny, a bald guy called Curly, a fat guy called Skinny. But do you recall the most famous wise guy of all? Oh, Rocco, the Brooklyn wise guy, had a very shiny gun. When he point it at you, ooh, you'd be smart to turn and run. Some of the other wise guys used to talk behind his back. Good thing he never heard them, 'cause they probably would get whacked. Rocco got his button, and not just for something he stole. So please don't get old Rocco mad, 'cause I'll have to dig the hole. Rocco, the Brooklyn wise guy, he's a good friend of mine. But if you owe Rocco money, you better pay him on time. Oh, you said I was funny? What the fuck is so funny about me? Just deliver those toys to the little pricks before I shove those eight reindeers up your ass, you fat bastard. One day, Rocco found out, once he pulled the scam. When Rocco went to look for him, oh, Nunzi was on the lam. Rocco, the Brooklyn wise guy, he's not easily amused. So don't ever get him angry, he'll make you an offer you can't refuse. Oh, take it from me, Petey Wheels. Forget about it.
You know, I mean,
a spoof.
Well, of course it's a spoof, but you know, it needed to be done. Of course, you guys are on collectibles. On a lot of collectibles, collaborations type CDs.
Yeah.
Right?
And we actually did, I tell you, the one we did, called, we called it Brooklyn the Musical.
Right.
And we wanted to give it like it was a show on Broadway. You know, just songs about, you know, New York and stuff. And we called it Brooklyn the Musical. And we recorded it. And it has influences of the Drifters and Dion.
Right.
You know, all the people that influenced us through the years. And, yeah, Frankie Valli and stuff. And Beach Boys. And what happened was we had 14 songs on the album. So I sent it to, and they said, you know, when you get this done, send it to us at Collectibles. So I
right.
sent it to them. And, they called up and Dennis called me back and he goes, listen, he goes, I got this playing in my office. He goes, and anybody who walks in the office goes, wow, who's that?
Wow.
And they go, I tell them, that's Frank and Dino. And they go, wow, that's good stuff, man.
Right.
You know? So he goes, so we want to do it. So I
cool.
said, oh, that's cool. He goes, yeah, we want to put it part of the collectible thing. I said, all right, great. So he goes, well, we're going to pick 10 songs and we're going to do it. So I said, why 10 songs? He goes, well, you know, we don't have to pay the royalties, you know,
right.
on 14 songs.
Right.
So I said, hold on a minute. I said, I'll call you back with that. So I call Dino. I tell Dino, and Dino goes, no. There's 14 songs on it. If they want it, it's 14 songs.
Right.
If they don't want it, if they don't want to do the 14 songs, he goes, I don't want to do the 10. He says, we put a lot of work into that, and the whole album tells a story. He goes, I want, it's either all 14 or nothing.
Right.
And I hang up with him, and I'm saying to myself, wow, okay, if that's what he wants, that's what he wants. And I go back to Dennis, and I go, I tell Dennis, and Dennis says,
No, I don't think they'd go for it. I says, whatever. I says, well, thanks anyway. I hang up the phone. The next day he calls up. He goes, I got to do it. I got to do the 14 songs. Everybody's driving me crazy. Come to this office. They want it. So he goes, so you'll notice. He goes, don't tell anybody else. He says, but you can count all the songs on everybody's album. Anybody who puts an album out here, there's 10 songs.
Right.
He goes, and we'll let you go with 14.
No,
we put a lot of time into it. It was that whole, like that, you know, and people say, like, you know, you do albums and stuff. And
right.
We had a lot of fun doing it.
Right.
We put a lot of time into mixing it.
Right.
It just had a lot of fun making it because if you listen to every song, it's definitely an influence of something else, and they all sound different. And we had a lot of good times doing it. And we, like I said, you know, we put a lot of hard work into it. We actually did more into the harmonies than we would normally do with a lot of different stuff.
Right.
But we just figured, okay, this will sound good here, whether it was one little part or something.
Right.
But I've always loved that whole album.
And if we were working on it, and then Dino brought in a sax player to do some solos and stuff.
Right.
Danny Murphy.
Right.
And then, did people sing on that with us, too?
Yeah, Frankie I was on one of the cuts. What's his name also in the group? Jimmy Della Rosa.
Yeah, they came by one day when we were doing something, so we threw them on the background or something.
Right.
And we gave everybody, you know, credits in the...
No, that's very cool. I thought Dennis was going to say, if you could spell Conxerhocken, Pennsylvania, then we'll put the other tunes on.
You know what the funny thing was? It wasn't one of those cocky things either. It was just like, listen, like my father said, we put a lot of time into this, and I didn't feel I wanted it chopped up.
Right.
So he was kind enough to do it and leave it at that.
Hey, I always had this talk, you know, with signing with Collectibles. And, of course, Collectibles only has one contract. You know, my feeling always has been it's not the few dollars that you get every year, you know, for selling, you know, the CDs,
right.
you know, the check that they write you. It's the fact that you get to be in a lot of homes and people get to know who you are. It's the best public relations that you can get.
This is what I told Dino.
Exactly.
The first time we went in it with the Burrows with a Christmas album.
Right.
It was the five Burrows and their friends, Spanky and Dino, and we did Christmas.
Right.
And there was three or four of our songs that we actually wrote the Christmas songs.
Right.
And when it came out, I told Dino, like, I saw the newspaper, I said, you know what? I don't care if we don't make a dime here.
Right.
I said, but as I'm looking through all these album covers, there's Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Right.
And there's Frankie and Dino.
Exactly.
And there's you know, Earth, Wind, and Fire. I said, we're all in the same book.
Well,
I said, so it feels good, you know, when people throw you into something like that. Advertisement.
But
you get that same letter every month?
Yes.
When they go,
yes.
Every quarterly, they send you that letter going, all yes. Right, when we reach 17 CDs, we'll let you know.
Right. I get it. I get it every month, of course. Well, you know, I got a lot of stuff up there. I talked them into doing a Harmony Street CD, you know, with some old cuts from Harmony Street, you know, and three or four of the tunes I wrote. So I get the mechanicals on that. And I also, he calls me up once a year and I give him a thing that I do in my studio called Michael in the Dreams, where I do all the voices, and every once in a while he'll call me up and say, give me an a cappella thing, I want to put it
nice.
You know, in a collaboration type CD or whatever. And of course you guys have a lot of tunes, you know, going that way too. How did the Backstreet Ballads CD collection start?
I don't know, we were talking about doing stuff, and then we were just came up with it, and we were messing around one night, sitting around, and then we started listening to all these songs, and I'm like, maybe we should start doing these, and actually, we started just doing them, and we didn't really think anything of it, because
right.
We had so many of them in the can that we were going to do.
Right, right.
And then we started picking them and choosing them after they were pretty much all done, and then we put it together.
Yeah, well, that whole collection is great stuff, and I will tell you that, you know, every once in a while, I will play cuts from, you know, all of the CDs, you know, on my show, and there's one tune from all the Backstreet Ballads that I play that Paulette always comes running up the stairs and says, turn it up. Go ahead.
Is it Gee Whiz?
It absolutely is. She loves
Gee Whiz.
That rendition of Gee Whiz. She loves Gee Whiz. I mean, she has it in her car. She can like play it over. She could put it on repeat and just play it over and over and over again. She just loves that version. Loves it. You know. So
that's great. We took the two of them instead of going around trying to, you know, we do condo shows.
Right.
We actually took the two of the CDs, Backseat Ballads 1 and 2.
Right.
And we put it in a, we repackaged it. We put it in a double case.
Ah.
And then we called it for submarine race watches only.
Wow.
There's water on the cover, and it says for submarine race watches only. And
very like cool.
28 or 38 songs in it, you know.
Ah, that's,
that sells quicker because people think it's 38 songs a week. And we only sell it for $15, so.
Wow.
You know. They instead of buying 2 10 of these, you know, they buy the one and they love it.
Well,
and on the thing we actually wrote on it, it said, "Spanky and Dino are not responsible for anything that may arrive at your house 9 months after listening to this double CD." Because there's 28 love songs, you know what I mean? It's just
right. It's, no, I hear you. I want to talk about Chris McDonald for a second. I know you guys, whenever Chris has a big show, you guys are very responsible for backing him up, and that means you have to know the backgrounds to almost every Elvis hit that Elvis did. So, you know.
What we do is we did the we do the actual backgrounds on a lot of the songs.
Right.
And then on a lot of the songs, we were just doing oohs and ahs and filling in. And that's what he loved about it the best, because we would fill in all those parts and sing around him. And when we first started out, there was 4 of us.
Right.
There was Frankie Iovino, there was Tony Alexander, and
right.
Me and Dino.
Right.
And then Tony, I don't know how much of this you want to put on the radio, but Tony was the guy that just, you know, if he got another job for the night, he'd
right.
get another job. And he missed so many concerts.
Right.
That it wound up turning out to be just the 3 of us.
Yeah, so then, you know, Chris turned around and said, you know, you guys sound good, just the 3 of you.
Right.
Why are you bringing this guy anyway?
Right.
So we were like, well, you know, he goes, well, I don't want it because if he can't be that, you know, loyal to this thing, I don't want it. So Tony was out. And then it was down to 3 of us.
Right.
And then a few years back, Frank wasn't feeling well. Frank
right.
out. And
right.
So then Dino and I did it.
Right.
So what Dino and I do, which is makes it sound good, you'll understand this because you're into harmony, is when we do a song, instead of Dino singing second and I'm singing, I mean first and I'm singing second,
right?
We figured out through the years that the lead voice is usually bouncing on the second part harmony.
Right.
So I'll sing baritone and Dino will sing first tenor.
Right.
And the lead is singing the second tenor notes.
Right. So you're singing a third under and a third over the
right.
lead.
And
right.
it sounds so full to him.
Right.
He loves it, you know.
Right. You know, which.
He sings a big note. We all hold the note. So Dino's over, I'm under.
Yeah.
And he just loves the sound. And his wife always tells us, he sounds so good with you guys. I just love it. She loves it.
The band likes it, too, because when we're around, they don't sing. They love it.
Yeah, because the band usually sings the small jobs with them.
Right.
And when he does the big ones, they don't have to sing, so they love it. They just have to play, you know.
Right, right. And, you know, Chris works very, very hard. I've done a few interviews with Chris,
yeah.
You know, and funniest thing I always said was, you know, we live in Wellington, so we drive down on the turnpike sometimes, and there's nothing scarier than coming out of the toll and all of a sudden seeing 125-foot Chris McDonald on the billboard staring at you.
Yeah. 2 shows ago, it was a show of, I don't know, maybe before the show they were passing out Spanish Fly or something. I don't
right.
know. But he did, it was 2 shows ago, the women, as soon as he walked down the steps to go walk through the audience, they all attacked him. They all wanted to kiss him.
Right.
They were kissing him, and as soon as he kissed one, that was the door opener.
Wow. Course.
I didn't think he was going to make it back up in one piece.
That's amazing.
And I said, well, it's a tough job. He goes, yeah, but someone has to do it, he said.
Yeah, right.
Listen, anybody who does what he does and actually sells out the Broward Center.
Yeah, I say that all the time.
It's just amazing that, you know, he's a guy, and you know what, you talk to him, he never says that he's Elvis Presley. He does the memories of Elvis.
Oh, I know.
Tries not to be, you know, but he does, he some of those things that he does, though, you look at him and you're like, wow, you know, certain views, you see him on the side, because I see him from the back and the side.
Right.
And I'll catch a glimpse and I'll be like, you know what? Some of these poses, man, really do look like the guy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know, he studies it and he's got it down. And, you know, we talked about the costumes are very expensive. The dry cleaning bill alone is crazy. You know, one of the things, too, that I wanted to talk about is this, that you guys are the perfect opening act, you know, because, you know, even though there's only two of you, you know, you sound like 405 when you get out there. And, you know, you really fill in what has to be done. And you guys have worked, you know, as we all have in this small circle of people that we're involved with almost every big name in the business. And I always think it's funny that no matter how many times you work with some of them, you are still in awe of a lot of these people that you work with. So-and-so walks in and all of a sudden, you know, you get that tingly feeling, whether it's Little Anthony or whether it was Maestro whether it was, you know, and it's just amazing that no matter how many times you work with these people, Howie and Judy put on some great shows. It's Howie and Judy Weber, and they're doing the Battle of the Boroughs every year at the Carl Springs Center for the Arts.
We got one coming up for next year, October 18th.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, Spanky and Dino always open those shows, you know.
For those of your listeners that live in Boca West.
Right.
They're doing a show in a couple of weeks at Boca West.
Right. Now, is that open to the public or is that just for residents?
No, it's just Boca West.
Yeah.
And they have to turn some of those people away. And you have no idea what they do to a room there. they cover the walls with cheesecloth and paint pictures on it. So when you walk into the room, it doesn't look like a ballroom. I mean, one wall was John Travolta and what's her name?
Olivia
Newton-John.
This whole 50s thing, it was crazy.
There was a giant car on there. It was a Dynap. I mean, it was unbelievable. Well, let me tell you something about when we did the show at Boca West 2 years ago.
Right.
In every corner of the room, there was a hot dog stand.
Right.
That sold not only hot dogs, but White Castle hamburgers.
Oh, great.
Then they had the longest food line I've ever seen as far as a buffet.
Right.
Then they had a cutting board for a rack of lamb.
Filet mignon. All top shelf liquor.
The best of the best. And then you talked about desserts. They had another banquet room filled with 185 different desserts.
Right.
I mean, talk about doing it up. They don't fool around. They really don't.
You know, is there anything that you would like to say to Spanky and Dino fans that have followed you all these years, either to the nightclubs that you owned or to Dino Pete's or to the many, many shows that you do or the many, many country clubs that you work? What would you like to say to those people?
Well, we definitely love the support, and we definitely like meeting a lot of people through the years that definitely have been there for us, as we, you know. And you know, it's funny because, you know, you go out and work every night, and you got to understand, even though you're doing it as fun for yourself, you know, you're these people's night out. You know, you're their night out.
Right.
They want to hear certain songs that bring back memories of their childhood or just in general in life or bring them back to a certain point. We want to thank them for always being there with us. And, you know, we love them all. I mean, it's great to see them, and we definitely appreciate it.
Yeah. Right, and
I always feel bad when someone will come up to me and I'll say, "Hey, how you been?" The only difference between years ago and now, and I tell people this, is like years ago, a beautiful woman would walk up to me, and she would say, "Are you Spanky?" And I would say, "Yeah," and she would say, "Oh man, I love listening to you sing. Your music is great, and it's such a pleasure to listen to you." And really, nothing has changed because.
Right.
Now, a beautiful woman will walk up to me, and she'll say, "Are you Spanky?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "My mother loves
you." You know, and that's, you know, sad but true, funny but true. But I do understand that. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with that, man. I think that's all good stuff. One thing I never asked you, how did you get the nickname Spanky?
Okay, When I was on TV when I was 4.5 years old, they took pictures of me. And I was singing, and it wasn't a four-year-old kid. The only thing made the picture look like a four-year-old kid was that I was wearing shorts. I had on a blue suit, which was a short pants blue suit with a blue jacket.
Right.
I had a white shirt on and a big bow for a tie. I mean, a big bow. It wasn't a tie. It was just a bow.
Right.
And I had blue suede shoes on. I'm standing at the mic with total command. I got my arms out. I'm selling this song like you couldn't believe. And I looked at this picture, and I'm going, wow, this kid really even surprised me, like, you know, the balls on this
right.
picture, you know. So I had the picture, and my niece took the picture one time, and she had it blown up, unbeknownst to me, to a size. It was life-size when she got done with it. And she gave it to me, and I had no place to put it. And I said, wow, that's great. You made it life-size, but I had no place to put it. So a few years went by, and when all those things were coming out, the Elvis and Marilyn Monroe, and they'd have all those stand-ups.
The posters, yeah, right.
Yeah, the ones that were cut out standing up. I decided to make one of those with this picture.
Wow.
So I got foam core, and I made the picture, and I cut it all out. I even cut out the mic wire. I mean, I saw detail I did it, and I hung it up in the studio.
Ah.
But because it just looks so, like, it just, and anybody who ever seen me at a record, you just look at it and say, wow, who's that? And I would say, that's me. And they'd go, how old are you then? And I'd go, 4. Anyway, to make a long story short, when I was about 15 or 14, no, I'm sorry, I was about 20, a friend of mine looked at the picture, said, is that you?
Right.
And I said, yeah. And she goes, you look just like Spanky. She said, from now on, I'm going to call you Spanky. And I go, really? And she goes, yeah. And then, people started calling me Spanky, because then she came into work one night, and she put a sticker on the front of my keyboard that said Spanky on it. So now, wherever I work, people came up and they go, Spanky, can you play this? And Spanky, can you play that? So, that's how I got this.
That's very cool. Well, Spanky and Dino, I am... First of all, so glad to call both of you my friend, and I am so glad that I have gotten to know you. Now that I am a resident in Southern Florida all these years and have worked with you, you are two of the most talented guys that I know. You make so much music in a genre that is my favorite genre, and I just love you both. Been great spending.
that was very nice.
But after all,
a lot of people wouldn't say that, and I know you just said it to us. And then when it goes on the air, you're going to say, "Yeah, we got these two guys over here. They're very annoying."
No, actually, when all is said and done, I'm going to double down on it. Wow. So, there you go.
I mean, you know, we got those pictures from you from that party.
Right.
We thought we were going and doing a duo, and all of a sudden we were a trio.
Right.
We had a front guy, and it was fun. The front guy was doing all the
right.
moves.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to understand that was after, like, a year and a half of preparing for a wedding, and, the morning after, the morning after, the morning after, and, you know, I pretty much was in a cloud that day.
All right.
You know.
Every once in a while, it's not bad. Quite.
Yeah, you know.
For someone who was in a cloud, it was a good cloud because you...
It was a beautiful day, actually.
Yeah, it was a gorgeous day, and you came through loud and clear singing and good stuff. We had a lot of fun that day.
So thank you so much, guys.
Hey, Mike, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Not a problem. All right. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, brother. Be good.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong.
Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong.
And we'll go to the chapel of love. just come with me, and we'll go to the chapel of love. There will be ringing the bell, angels will be singing. There will be bringing gifts for you and me. Oh, how happy we will be.
Zip zip zoom 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 wow wow wow.
Zip zip zimmerlimmer zip zip zoom 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 wow wow wow. Zip zip zimmerlimmer zip zip zoom 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 wow wow wow. Zip zip zimmerlimmer zip zip zoom 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 wow wow wow. Whoa.
Oh,
zip zip zimmerlimmer zip zip zoom 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 wow wow wow. Zip zip zimmerlimmer zip zip zoom 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 wow wow wow.
Now that I'm so in love with you.
So in love with you. Ooh, 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 ooh,
ooh, ooh. Oh, baby.
Baby.
I want you to know that I love you.
Lovely lady,
do today,
like I do today.
Until the end of time.
How did you up in love with me?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you very much.
Have a great night. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and finally found somebody who could make me be true, could make me be blue, and even be glad just to be sad for thinking of you.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars shine, always reminding me that we're apart. You'll wander down the lane and far away, leaving me the song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday, the music of the years gone by.
Here I go again, I hear those trumpets blow again, all aglow again, taking a chance on love. Here I slide again, about to take the ride again, starry-eyed again, taking a chance on love. I thought that cards were a frame-up, I never would try. Now I'm taking the game up, and the ace of hearts is high.
Oh, the shot, baby, had such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old man hit, baby, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with his teeth, baby, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy love's over, where's old man hid, baby? No, there's never, never a trace of red.
I saw you last night and got that old feeling when you came inside. I got that old feeling. The moment you danced by, I felt a thrill, and when you caught my eye,
down among Brazilians, coffee beans grow by the billions, so they've got to find those extra cups to fill. They got an awful lot of coffee in Brazil. You can't get cherry soda, cause they've got to fill that quota, and the way things are, I'll bet they never will. They got a zillion cups of coffee in Brazil. No tea or tomato juice, you'll see. No potato juice. Most planters down in Santa's all say no, no, no.
I stand at your gate, and the song that I sing is of moonlight. I stand away for the touch of your hand in the June light. The roses are beside you, a moonlight serenade.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut tree, the wishing well, and I'll be seeing you.
Will you smile it?
Will you smile it?
Oh, will you smile it?
When you smile it,
the whole world's gonna smile with you.
Smile with you.
Oh, when you're laughing,
when you're laughing,
keep on laughing,
keep on laughing.
Oh, the sun comes shining all the way through,
all the way through.
But when you're crying,
when you're crying,
oh, you bring out the rain. So snap your sides. Oh, 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 smiling.
Smiling.
Keep on smiling.
When you're smiling.
And the world smiles with you. Oh.
My heart is sad and lonely. For you I sigh, for you dear only. Why haven't you seen it? It's all for you, body and soul. I spend my days in longing and wondering why it's me you're wronging. I tell you, I mean it. I'm all for you, body and soul.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you. And the way you look tonight, you're lovely with your smile so warm and your cheeks so soft. There is nothing for me but to love you. And the way you look tonight,
I don't believe in fretting and grieving. Why mess around with strife? I never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life. Now some find it pleasant dining on pheasant. Those things roll off my knife. Just serve me tomatoes and mashed potatoes. Give me the simple life. I'll never smile again until I smile at you. I'll never laugh again. What good would it do? Cause tears would fill my eyes. My heart would realize that I'll about sister.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone, that's all, that's all.
Did you say I've got a lot to learn? Well, don't think I'm trying not to learn. Since this is the perfect spot to learn, you better teach me tonight. Starting with the ABC of it, right down to the XYZ of it. Help me solve the mystery of it. Better teach me tonight. Oh, baby, won't you please come home? Because your daddy's all alone. You know I cried in vain. Never more, never more, never more to call your name. Since you left, you broke my heart. Because I thought we'd never part. Oh, every hour in the day, you can hear me say, oh, baby, won't you please come home? I need your loving. Oh, baby, won't you please come home?
Have faith in your dreams and someday. In the galaxy.
to be with you. Will you take part in my life, my love? That is my dream. Always try to give. Don't ever take it. Life has its music. Life has its songs of love. Life is but a dream, and I dream of you. Strange as it seems, all that I see you, I try to tell you just what you mean to me.
FM, the Artistics there, and One Way is what it was called. CBS FM. Hi, who's this on the line?
Hey, Don, this is Mike Miller up in Danbury from Harmony Street.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
You guys are going to appear at the White House, is that true?
That's correct.
Oh,
we're
that's
going to,
great.
We're going to be singing for the President of the United States and the First Lady on Wednesday night, which is the same day as the tree lighting, and this is going to be a party that Hillary Clinton is throwing in the East Room of the White House.
That's great.
We've been lucky enough to be invited.
Well, that's going to be a night you're going to remember for a long time.
Oh, I'm telling you. We're so excited, Don.
What would you like to hear?
How about Never, Never, Never by the Jive 5?
Okay, we'll do that. And a little bit later on, maybe we'll play one of your things.
Oh, thanks a lot, Don. We love you.
Say hello to everybody.
I will do that.
Open up your heart, recall how it
Street.
We couldn't believe our eyes
when we were there.
Wasn't it a big surprise to find
we really cared?
We looked into each other's hearts. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street. We couldn't believe our eyes
when we were there.
Wasn't it a big surprise?